Today on Karina and Kirsten Get to Work, we're talking about all the great news for women in the news.
The good news in the news.
The good news in the news.
For you, listener friends.
And us.
Welcome to Karina and Kirsten Get to Work. I'm Kirsten Barron.
And I'm Karina Hoyer.
And we are delighted that you have joined us today. We are on the traditional lands of the Lummi and Nooksack people. Thank you for being here, listener friends. We are here to talk about ease, meaning, and joy for women at work. And particularly today, we're talking about, like, what's good news in the news for women?
Yeah.
It just seemed to us, Karina and I often will send texts or when we're on a walk or something, talk about something that we saw that was interesting in the news. But it struck us that this week I was like, wow, there's some really fun stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Like I felt lightened, heartened.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
And in fact, Kirsten, I think you send me more news articles than I send you.
Do I?
Yeah. And I love it because you're just
I'm all cranked up. I'm like, look at this.
You're just in the news. But I did send you one this morning or yesterday.
Ooh, so good.
That I was so delighted by. Now, this wasn't really.
This is the capstone of our episode, listeners. This is the capstone. We're going to start at the apex, the acme, the best piece.
I just found it so fantastic. So I was reading an article I think it was the New York Times, and they were talking about this art exhibit by Kersha Ketchel, I think is how you pronounce her name. It's called The Ladies Lounge, and it's this ongoing installation at a museum in Australia?
Tasmania. And interestingly, she is an American artist.
Okay.
With an exhibit in Tasmania.
Yeah. Okay. So the exhibit is basically this ongoing installation at this museum called Mona, and it's like it invites women only to come behind this luxurious green silk curtains inside this and into this little lounge that's ladies only. And in this ladies only lounge, you're served champagne by male butlers who are the only men allowed in the space. And you can look at some artworks that are like
only in that ladies lounge space.
Only in that ladies lounge.
And a couple of pieces by Picasso. Yeah.
Yes. And it was inspired by a male only or a men only lounge from years gone by. In fact, I think in the article she says women were not allowed to drink public
until 1965.
Yeah. I mean, that's like,
yeah.
I mean, it's not my lifetime, but close.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to drink in public. And so she's like, okay, we weren't allowed to drink in public 40, 50, 60 years ago. And here we are. Now we're having this segregated experience in this museum. Well, turns out men were getting pissed about it. And one guy,
because they were denied access to a certain part of the museum.
Right. Which, by the way, I mean, I'm just so delighted by
this whole thing.
Idea.
Can you just hear the giddiness in our voices, listeners? We're so giddy about this.
I want this art installation to come to a town near me. So
somebody sues. Of course,
this guy sues.
Man sues,
and he says, "Look, I bought a ticket to the art museum expecting to experience art, and I'm systematically." I was excluded.
And that is discriminatory because of my gender.
Right. I cannot experience the art. Mm-hmm. And so I was reading through this article and I was like, well, I kind of get it. I mean, we really don't want to discriminate against anyone, even men. But then again, I'm delighted by this art installation. And then in the court, you're over there giggling.
I am. I'm laughing because I love this so much.
In the court proceedings and the artist, she says, look, the men... It was so delightful. The men are experiencing the ladies' lounge, she said. Their experience of rejection is the artwork. And they're experiencing it exactly the way she intended. So I just...
It's supposed to be different. They're supposed to be excluded. And here's the great news. The court agreed with her.
Yes.
They were experiencing the art as she intended. And that was not discriminatory. It was artistic expression.
Exactly. It just, like, I can't stop. I'm almost tearing up, giddy, like laughing about it, tears of joy. Because it just turned my perspective of it on its head. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, wait a minute. Uh-huh. Yeah, there you go, brother. You actually are experiencing it. You getting your money's worth.
Right. You got your $35 worth, friend. Just wasn't the experience you were wanting.
Just wasn't champagne getting served by butlers looking at a Picasso. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's a great one.
Right. So delight.
Last minute entry, too. Oh, a last minute entry to the show.
I think I said this to you yesterday.
It was yesterday. Yep.
Thank you for letting me go there. Not quite related to work, but also, yeah, it is. That it was her work. The artist's
absolutely.
Work.
This is absolutely her work. And I think it's also just a really interesting kind of commentary on society in general, which is where all of our work takes place within society.
Exactly.
Right? There we go.
Yeah. So speaking of women at work, though, there was this other great article that you sent me called Three Reasons Women Are Re-entering the Workforce at a Record Pace from Forbes.
Forbes magazine.
Yeah.
So right before COVID, the Pew research showed that I got to back up. Sorry, I've got to cut that. I made a mistake there. We know that during COVID, the COVID economic downturn, that had a disproportionate effect or impact on women in the workplace.
Yeah.
Right before the
pandemic.
That's what I was trying to say. Right before the pandemic, women were really close to our highest, some of our highest engagement in the workplace ever.
Yeah, I think it was like we made up 51% of the workforce pre-pandemic, right at the, like 2019,
December of 2019, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then as we get into the pandemic, we talked about women losing in the workplace, 12 million women leaving the workforce because of the pandemic.
Which is also, I mean, just if we can rewind just a tiny bit, we were losing women at a far higher rate than men, not only because of the kinds of jobs that we were doing at the time, many of them were shut down, but also because we had to come home.
Right, because of caregiving.
Because of caregiving.
Right, because of caregiving. Right. So, you know, women have traditionally been in, you know, hospitality and retail. Those things were hit hard by the pandemic. And then having to take care of kiddos who are now at home, you know, going to school from home.
Right.
Yeah. And other people.
Also, do you remember, I quote this frequently, but I'm sure I misquote it, but not only were women traditionally in those hospitality or customer service or whatever kind of roles, we also make up the majority of minimum wage workers.
Yes.
And in fact, the vast majority of minimum wage workers are not teenage kids or teenage girls. It's women with children or women with
We've
at least
one
children.
We've talked about this before. And what child in the workplace. Yeah.
And a partner.
Yeah.
So, of course, all of those jobs got shut down. Many of those minimum wage jobs got shut down. And
then childcare went away. So even if you did have a job, you didn't have childcare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out, though, post-pandemic, women are recovering. We're re-entering the workforce at record paces and outnumbering men again. Right?
Yeah.
Labor participation rate for prime-aged women, which I love that, prime-aged women.
Prime age.
Between 25 and 54 reached an all-time high of almost 78%. Mm-hmm. Almost 78% of prime-aged women.
I hate that word. Really.
I know, and it sounds like I'm saying primate, but I'm saying prime-aged. But also, I'm never going to say that again.
I just want to say women between 25 and 54.
Yeah,
make up are 78 almost 78% of women between 25 and 54 are participating in the workplace.
Yeah.
Now this is fantastic because, like, we know that when we have workers participating in the economy, it grows and boosts our economy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I read in this article is that, like, women entering the workforce at these relatively greater rates has increased our economy by almost $9 billion.
Oh.
So why do we care about women in the workplace? Not just because it gives individuals like satisfaction and economic security and the ability to chart their course in the world and good health care and, being able to save for retirement, all the things that we need to care for ourselves. It's also really good for the economy.
Yeah. There you have it.
There we have it.
And why? And this article went on, again, it's good news. It's great news for women.
Mm-hmm.
It went on to say that women's employment, several reasons are contributing to this rapid increase in our employment. And one of which is that we're moving away from some of those jobs we did pre-pandemic and into new industries and new roles. Like census data shows that women's employment in business occupations like financial managers and HR workers and operations specialists and
project managers is increasing significantly.
Yes, yes. Which are also better paying jobs, mm-hmm. which then get us the kind of some of those benefits you just articulated. Mm-hmm. So we're moving into...
There's a broader expanse of positions that women are entering into.
Yes, including leadership, mm-hmm. which is another reason, right? We're taking on more leadership roles. And for good. I mean, and for sort of the greater good.
Yes.
Organizations that have at least 30% women in leadership positions are 12 times more likely to be in the top 20 for financial performance, according to one study that was cited in
this article.
We talk
about this all the time. Like yeah. that when you have women in leadership in your company, and almost all across the board, the company performs better. I
yes.
mean, it's just a thing.
Yeah.
And this year, for the first time, CEOs of Fortune 500 companies now exceed 10% for the first time in 68 years of looking at this list.
I know. Remember when we celebrated the 10%, mm-hmm. 10% of female CEOs? It's
yeah. like now we're over.
Now we're
just
over.
Just a little bit, but we're still over.
But yeah.
So yeah.
And again, the
women in leadership.
Yeah, women in leadership. And then the article went on to explore. Or goes on to explore that also hybrid work offers women a lot more flexibility, and therefore we're able to participate a lot more. Research estimated that COVID accelerated the work from home trend by the equivalent of almost 40 years of pre-pandemic growth. So,
without the pandemic, it would have taken us 40 years to get to this kind of hybrid workplace.
Yeah.
Who knows how they figured that piece of information out?
I don't know.
Whatever.
I don't know.
But the point is, we have this wonderful byproduct of the pandemic where there is a lot more flexibility around work, working from home, work hours, you know, all of those things, which benefit women.
That's right.
I mean, men too, but significantly more, the research shows, impact women's participation.
Yeah, that's right. And their ability to work. Glassdoor said that remote work options allowed roughly 1 million women in their 30s and 40s to remain in the workforce because of remote work when they would have probably dropped out for childcare or for child-related.
Which makes sense. The Brookings Institute, I read, did a study and found that the women driving this kind of resurgence in the workplace, the resurgence of women in the workplace, the primary demographic is women who have a child, whose youngest child is under the age of 5.
Oh.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just love this ability of women to participate in the workplace.
Yeah.
It's good news.
It's good news.
Stinking good news.
It is good news. Now, of course, this article does caution us that the path to gender equity is...
The road is long.
It's a long road. But this is good news for women. And therefore good news for the economy, which is one of the points mm-hmm. you were making earlier. Mm-hmm. And good news for men, because what's good for women is good for men, except for that art installation. Hey, I'm going to say that was even good for men because they
had an experience.
They had an experience.
They got their experience.
A very unique experience.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. Yes. I'm so sorry for you. Not. Okay. She says tongue in cheek. Okay.
Story number two.
Yeah.
Big highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Big highlight.
What was the title of this other story?
I actually, in our show outline, actually cited to the study, which I will give the link to the listeners as well.
Uh-huh.
This is an organization called Girls Who Code. It's a nonprofit.
Uh-huh.
And they have a campaign called Moms First.
Mm.
And I can't remember where I found this article, whether this NPR or I can't remember where, but I went right to the study. And the Moms First campaign hired Boston Consulting Group to do a study of 5 different large companies providing childcare as a benefit in the workplace.
Yeah. By the way, it was Axios.com.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So let's just do a backflip.
Yes.
let's do a backflip, because like the return on investment was as much as 425%.
Yes. Yes.
This is a nutty, crazy, good study.
And I have to say, I want to shout out to this article, because when you sent it to me, the headline said child care benefits for workers effectively pay for themselves, new study finds, mm-hmm. which is in a nutshell, what you just said, it pays for themselves and it pays for itself and more.
And we have been saying this for a long time on this show.
Yeah.
We have been talking about childcare as infrastructure. We have recognized the benefits of childcare in the workplace, not just for women, for everybody,
yes.
actually, for yeah. everybody. But this study, it quantifies it.
That's right. They said not only does it potentially pay for itself financially, it results in fewer absences per year,
mm-hmm.
And recruitment and retention. People were 86% more likely to stay with their employer. And I say this all the time too, turnover is expensive. It can cost up to 2.5 times an annual salary to replace somebody,
mm-hmm.
both in actual money out the door and lost productivity. And so, again, it's not just money in the bank. It's retaining people, having more productivity, and also job satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. It's worth it to kind of just briefly touch on the 5 companies that they studied.
Uh-huh.
UPS
uh-huh.
opened an on-site childcare for hourly workers.
It was one location.
Yeah. This is all pilot projects. Okay, Etsy provided a stipend to employees with children of $1,000 a month for childcare.
Yep.
And they also provided backup childcare benefits of $4,000 a year.
Yeah.
So you have a list of babysitters, and if you need a babysitter when your kids are sick, here's the list. You got $4,000, call somebody.
Yeah.
Synchrony did just backup childcare, and Steamboat, the ski resort in Colorado, opened a child care center close to the ski resort, but not at the ski resort. And Fast Retail does a ton of retail stuff. Did a stipend, I think, of $1,000. But in every single one of these instances, the work site that was studied that had these benefits reported fewer absences in many 16%. I'm sorry, 16 fewer in a year for these on average.
Yeah.
86%, as you said.
Per person. 16 fewer absences per person.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
In every regard. People said, I feel like my career progression is better. One woman who was quoted said, I feel so supported mm-hmm. by my employer that there's no way I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like they've been with me through all of these difficult times. I guess she had some difficult times during the study period. She's like, no, I'm staying.
Which is interesting too, because all of these things we know make people make a workplace worth staying mm-hmm. at. It's honoring the whole human, being able to feel supported, not having to choose, but also eliminating the micro stresses of what do I do when I have a sick kid?
Yeah, yeah.
What is, and the loss of a day or two here and there that's unplanned. Mm-hmm. We know how disruptive that is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can see it.
Yeah, and it's amazing.
And I think there is some good news at the federal level as well. It wasn't necessarily cited in this news article.
No, but it's been in the news. You know, Patty Murray, one of the senators from Washington State, is on Senate Appropriations. And she has been an incredible advocate during her, oh my gosh, is she 3 decades, 4 decades?
I think it's like 30 years, something like that.
Yeah, she's been there. And, you know, the mom in tennis shoes has been after this issue of education and childcare and kids and moms for her whole career. She has been successful in negotiating with all of her people, all the parties, all the things, the largest childcare appropriation in our history.
Yeah, in this political climate.
And what's so great about this is she continues to push this idea that childcare is infrastructure for work.
Yeah.
Just like we need roads to get, you know, products and commerce and people around the country, and we have all the things. It's also childcare. So good on Senator Murray.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations to her. And hello. This study shows that she is absolutely on the right track.
Yeah. Do you know where that mom in tennis shoes came from? I recently read that.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's a great one.
It was just that when she began on the campaign trail, somebody.
No, she went to testify somewhere as a person. This is before she got into politics.
Oh.
I think before she got into politics, she was testifying at some kind of a public event, and somebody said, well, you're just a mom in tennis shoes.
Yeah, so it was a demeaning comment.
Yes.
It was made by somebody
else.
And
she got pissed, and she was like, I'm running.
And I'm going to use this. Like, you didn't insult me. In fact, you affirmed
yes,
me. And I thought that was cool.
You might be right, and she was running already, told her. But the point is, she, like, grabbed a hold of it and said, that's exactly right.
That's exactly who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm going to Tasmania to check out that arm exhibit. I wanted to cuss there, and I didn't do it. Okay, third story, mm-hmm. delightful as always,
as always,
all of these things
are. We
have
to shout out to our Iceland sisters.
Yeah. So we've talked about this before, many of our listeners will recall, but that Iceland, beginning in 1975, Icelandic women have gone on strike periodically for a whole day. And this is people who are not just in paid work, but it's paid and unpaid work, including childcare and household chores and whatnot. And when women
cleaning
stop
cooking.
Working, the record, you can hear it, the record
the
just
screech.
Screech. And these Icelandic women know it. They're like, and they have gone on strike periodically to protest inequity. And they did another one. They just did it. And it was the first 24-hour strike since 1975. And Morty, which had, I think, a similar impact. Mm-hmm. One of the things I loved about this, too, is that the president, who's a man, was very supportive of the strike, and their prime minister is a woman, and she went on strike too.
I love it.
And she actually only kept vital services open that day for the 24-hour period, and she's like, okay, sisters, see ya. I'll meet you at the bar. Let's have a good time.
I also love that they included non-binary people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's one of the things I think that Iceland, I think when we talked about why Iceland does have I don't know if they still have the most gender equity of any country in the world, but they did, I think, last year or the year before.
Yeah.
But I think one of the reasons that we talked about that they do have that kind of equity is that it is about different identities. It's not just women, right?
Mm.
It's mm-hmm. about non-binary
yeah,
people
very
as well.
Accepting of more than just the binary.
Which is great because kind of like when you bring equity to this group, you bring more equity to that group. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the rising tide
mm-hmm.
floats all boats. And I loved that it was in the news again and that they're still at it. Because yes, they may, according to certain markers, have the most gender equity of any country. Organizers of this protest say we still have a long way to go.
Yes. I love that.
Because we're not at zero.
And they also kind of look at their place as having the most gender equity in the world as being a reason to push to really live up to that.
Yeah.
Right? We're going to really live up to that and live into this.
And push for more.
I just love it.
I also love the idea.
I feel so happy.
Of just a strike.
I feel so stinking happy.
It's very empowering.
Yeah. It's empowering.
I kind of like that idea.
And it's exciting.
I think I'm going to tell Barry I'm going on a 24-hour strike.
I think I will, too.
I think I'm going to go on a, 24-month strike.
I'm not kidding you. I think we should go on a 24-hour strike. We're going to discuss that more and come back to listeners with something next time.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Okay.
Okay. The fourth story, the last story, is just, again, more good news for women. And
yes.
More delight.
More delight.
More delight for us. And you popped this one in last minute, too.
I popped this one in last minute because, so usually we know as women that it's, we, you know, there are fewer of us in places of power, fewer of us in places of great economic abundance. We have to, like, we have more of the household chores at home right. than our partners. We have more caregiving obligations, right? There's this, I believe, a bit of, I think this is true. I think women have to work harder
yeah.
to prove themselves,
yeah.
right? There's all these places where we're just required to do more.
Or less. I'm going to say the one I'm thinking of is we can't even have more than one drink a night.
Right. We can't even have more than one drink, right? We're always kind of bearing more of a burden, you know?
Yeah. And then we're...
I mean, just all this stuff too. The babies, the menstruating, the menopause. I mean, just all these kind of things, right? It's yeah. like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well.
New research says, turns out...
I love this.
I know, right?
So women actually realize... more benefits than men from regular exercise, and like we don't have to work as hard.
No, we don't have to do as much. Them. I know. This findings were published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. They took a look at more than 400,000 U.S. adults over several decades, and they showed that women were 24% less likely than those who do not exercise. Okay, that statistic, forget it. What they realized was that women who even exercise moderately, go on a couple of walks, do some aerobic exercise, maybe lift some weights, it just experienced this like 36% reduced risk for fatal heart attack or stroke, while men only had like a 14%. Mm-hmm. And the amount of work that the guys had to put in was far more to even exercise, to experience that benefit. So we just have to do a little bit and...
We get more. And how many times can we say that we do a little bit and get more?
We do a little bit less and get more.
Listeners, we can say it today.
With regards to exercise. So there great. You have it.
Another reason to exercise and take care of your precious, precious self.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just keep these good news stories coming, Kirsten, because I love it. And they're a little bit few and far between sometimes.
It feels that way.
Yeah. So to have a whole slew coming at us.
It's a fiver today.
It's a fiver.
It's a fiver in good news in the news for us.
Yes, exactly. Cheers to all of you.
Cheers to all of you out there working and doing it. And stay tuned for the 24-hour strike.
Yeah, we'll
something's
going to
happen,
or
people.
Not. Something might not happen, not for during that 24 hours. Thanks for listening.
Bye, folks.
Bye. Karina and Kirsten Get to Work is recorded and produced by yours truly, Karina Hoyer.
And Kirsten Barron.
Find all of our episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, on our website, or email us at yougettowork@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening.